At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Tom Fresh and Sweet Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
We are there crafting and loving clans.
I don't know what I'm here.
Go fuck yourself. And I am a sports entertainer.
Ladies, gentlemen, NBs, this is the Eat Sleep Elite podcast, your weekly AEW review and breakdown. I'm the Digital Duke, also known as the Digital Phantom, also known as the Lee Sun Al-Gai, the voice of the outer world. And with me in this Toy Alexu Tuesday is indeed Shai Halud of the Immortal Dreamscape himself, Charlay. Holy shit, it's Charlay. Sorry.
Fight forever.
Now that chance been ruined forever for me by that god-awful game. All right, sorry.
How's going, everybody? Welcome to the show.
How's going, everybody? Yeah. All right. It's TSC. We're back. It's wrestling time. Fuck, man. I can tell you already, I am fucking dopeless for the rest of this week with no podcast to do. I got to keep it a buck with you, man. All right, I guess let's just, take your orders of business, whatever podcast platform you happen to be listening to this on. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, if you happen to be listening to this back on YouTube, hit that follow, hit that subscribe button, Follow us on Twitter at Bane Duke for me, that's BaneDuke, at Oach with an X instead of an A for Charlay, at Eat Sleep Elite for the entire podcasting network, and you shall be given spoils of war if you join with us. We haven't engaged in any recent wars, but we still have spoils, I promise. And you'll be able to claim any of 3 items from the Spoil of War cabinet. And what items you choose, it's up to you. But, there's pretty good stuff in there. So, yeah, enjoy your... All right, I'm just having fun here at the top of this show. I guess let's get into it. And we'll start off like we like to, always with a little bit of positivity. With our favorites this week, and we got me going first this week. And there's really only one thing you can pick this week. To be honest with you, there was only one match worth watching this week. No offense to the other wrestlers on the other shows. That's not their fault. No one knew what these two were going to go out and fucking do this week. I don't think they knew what they were going to go out and do this week until someone showed up this week. It's like, what if we went fucking Broadway, man? What if we went in on Dynamite to open the show without telling anybody, without any implication? Just all we know is that one of the best wrestlers in the world is Will. And the last time that he wrestled one of the best wrestlers in the world in Brian, MJF went an hour. So you could have put that together in your head, but you never would have unless you had a reason to, And so when it just kept going and kept going, and when I say, Charlay, that it started off with me kind of just sitting there like watching the match, and I was like, okay, we're going. I blinked and 15 minutes of the match, or at least 15 minutes of the TV show was gone. You know what I mean? And I was like, and I knew this was going to be an hour going into it. So I wondered how it was going to feel pacing wise, because other times when I've watched hour long matches, knowing it's an hour does get into my head sometimes, And I start to be like, okay, all right, we're laying out, blah, 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 whatever. But in this case, I did know it. And I did still notice when they were laying out and stuff like that. You can't help but notice because they're laying there. They're right there. Look, they're laying anyway. I don't think, it doesn't change anything about the match. You're going to have to do some of that to get to an hour. It's not like, if somebody actually just straight wrestled for an hour, they probably would have a heart attack or something. From the amount of, you just wouldn't be able to move by the end, which I'm sure people have done it before, but it's not an Iron Man match. That's not the point. It's just an hour long match. And so... I don't know. I guess I'll just start talking about what made this match so special. I mean, MJF has psychology and selling that I think are really, when he talks about being a generational talent, he doesn't just mean on the mic. Obviously, everybody knows what he can do on the mic. In the ring, though, MJF's psychology in the ring and his selling are, I think, top 5, if not top 2, 3 in AEW. And it's what carries a lot of his matches. We started out with some mind games and, what's fascinating to me? The first 20, 30 minutes of this match, they didn't really slow down for the most part. And no. What I liked about that was MJF wasn't like going faster to keep up with Will. Will was trying to match his pace to Max's to try and because every time he would get going, he would slow down. But it's almost like they sort of, as a match, decided that they were going to blend the two paces. So you have Will going at 100 miles an hour, but MJF still taking and slowing things down. And yet at the same time, still being able to match him athletic feet for athletic feet. You know what I mean? I feel like doing this with MJF gets to show people a little bit more just like how good he actually is in the ring, because everyone knows how good Will is. And then, you know, I would like to imagine that people aren't going to say that Will carried him in this match, because that would be hilarious, because it's not even close like to the truth, you know. But either way, MJF being a weaselly little bastard, you know, throughout the match, you know, trying to avoid getting hurt by Ospreay, trying to bend the rules, blah blah blah, all that stuff. And so I used the term Broadway at the top of this match, and I'm not trying to like flex my insider wrestling knowledge here. I probably don't even know the proper usage of the term, right, or the proper definition. Not that there's really that to any of these things anyway. There's not like a wrestler's dictionary out there. These are just terms that they use interchangeably, presumably with other terms that mean it really is, honestly, if I had to guess, easier to communicate backstage using those terms than it is to try and like word by word break down how we're going to do a match. Probably gets harder to do that when you're not, you know, speaking the same language. But either way, you know, like I imagine it's so that you can just easily communicate what you want to do without having to spend like an hour talking about one section of the match or something, you know, like that lasts like 5 seconds,
exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
That's my guess. And it also could just be that, you know, everyone likes to have a little bit of insider, you know, knowledge. So maybe they did it because they were like, no, they're the marks. We're the insiders. So we're going to have our terms, you know, and they are not supposed to know them, you know. But Broadway generally refers to like an hour long match. How long did this match exactly go, Charlie? I'm sure you have the time written.
It is a shoot 59 minutes, 58 seconds.
So this is an example of something that I guess I haven't really talked about when I talk about these super long matches. Hour-long matches are, like, insane to me, like, especially if they work. Because I've seen, like, maybe one or two where I was like, wow, that was an ad. They thought that I needed to go an hour, you know? And, like, okay, but maybe that was just to hit me on the wrong days, right? But most of the ones that I've seen, I've really enjoyed. You know what's something I actually, I'm so glad that I wrote down everything that I was thinking in the moment with this match. MJF was doing spots in this match I don't think we've ever seen him do before. Stuff that I've never seen him do, at least, you know, like.
Yeah.
I didn't write down an example, unfortunately, but there was like various moves that he hit and stuff like that I was like, I don't think I've ever seen him do that, you know? So, and I love when pro wrestling surprises me. Like, I feel like every now and then, especially after we've done this show for like almost fucking 10 million years now, it feels like, you know, that I feel like I'm seeing a lot of what pro wrestling has to offer, you know? And then every now and then something like this will just come along and be like, oh yeah, I didn't realize I ever needed an MJF versus Will Ospreay hour long match. But you know, now that I have it, I'm like, I'm really glad that I have this now because it's fucking awesome, you know? Like,
yeah.
You know, I guess I should mention that early on in the match, Will grabbed the table and then just kind of got left out for a while. They did a couple teases about whether it was going to be used or not. I do believe Max ended up going through the table eventually. Am I incorrect, or was it Will?
I do know one of them did.
One of them did end up going through it. Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. To be honest with you, this was that kind of match. Like, there was like a, you know, that's something we actually, I don't know if we've even talked about this on this match. This was one of those matches where it was almost in the reversals where you took a lot of your damage, you know what I mean? There was offense. Don't get it twisted, but there was a lot more, like, defensive reactive wrestling. And so like a lot of the spots, like you said, they could have been both of them going through the table for all we know, because that was how kind of the psychology of the match worked to an extent. They were both just trying to win. It was almost as desperate as when he was fighting Brian, him being MJF. And this is, you know, and yeah, a couple of side things here. So yeah, and so obviously I love it when I'm surprised, and this match just had something that blew my mind even more, like always, you know. I think this is going to be match of the year for Dynamite. I don't think it's going to be a close race. I think this is it, and there's nothing touching it. If something somehow touches this match, it'll be, God, I want to see what match that would be, for fuck's sake.
If something does.
Yeah, I'd like to see that match, if whatever the fuck that's going to be, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
The only thing that could actually do that, I think, would be if they did straight up Ospreay versus Ricochet on it, you know? Like, that would maybe be the only thing that could somehow, but I don't think that's, I think it'd still be an argument that you could still like this match over that, depending on how good it is, you know what I mean? Like, but yeah, whatever, we won't speculate about wrestlers that aren't even technically signed yet, so.
Yeah. But I'm with you here. I thought this match was just truly fucking phenomenal. I think it is my favorite Dynamite match ever. And I'm going to tell you what, I might go as far as to say in this company, it's definitely top five. And we'll see how time goes on with it. Just like the MJF and Danielson one. I didn't want to immediately. I knew right
the best
away
match
it was
of all time.
Probably my favorite 60-minute match in the company. But I wasn't sure just yet where. I've let time go on.
So tough for me because the Bullet Club Gold match, I didn't even realize a tag team match could ever go 60 minutes. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, and that's just another example of how fucking special
it hasn't been since like the fucking 80s since they had like 60 minute tag team classics, I feel like. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So that's just like, that was uncorking some fucking history pro wrestling had buried for like a decade. You know what I mean? But this is like, MJF is almost reviving a type of wrestling that we haven't seen in that long too.
This is the perfect combination figure, of MJF, styles.
You know, maybe they should have just kept MJF with FTR because they kind of do, the three of them represent a time in wrestling that is just gone now, that people don't do that stuff anymore. They wrestle for an hour. They wrestle, you know, when they're heels, they wrestle like true heels. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, we got to talk about the moment when MJF and Ospreay are in the crowd and then a youngling starts chopping MJF.
That youngling better become a pro wrestler. That's all I know.
That was awesome. MJF flicked the kid off. Ospreay gave her a high five. And
apparently he gave her a t-shirt too. Yeah.
Yeah. Gave her a shirt after the show and stuff. That's awesome.
Shout out Will. Will seems like such a good fucking guy, dude. Like, what a fella.
These guys, they literally brought all the juice, all the athleticism, intensity that you want.
Oh, that was the thing I was going to say. How is it possible that Will Ospreay wrestles the athletic super freak style that he does for an hour?
Because I don't think we've ever seen anyone like him.
Have we ever seen anyone that does it the way Will does wrestle for an hour before?
We've seen elite gymnasts. We've seen elite
athletes. Okay, well, Kenny, to be fair, Kenny. Like, Kenny's the only one, though, that I can think of that's ever gone for an hour that wrestles the way that these guys wrestle. You know what I mean? Like,
it's very rare that these guys exist in the business.
That's insane. Think about how much fucking stamina Will has to have to be able to wrestle like an absolute fucking demon for an hour. That's insane. Again, they laid out, but they had to. Because
and then all the different layers of storytelling, even when MJF wins the match, which... did not see that coming from a mile away. Just thought.
Actually, let's talk about how we got there. So it was. It's not going to take that long to talk about. Yeah. Will has MJF. We'll say against the ropes. He didn't actually physically have him against the ropes, but let's say he had his back against the wall. Right. MJF looks like he's about to lose. He's basically laid out after whatever spot they had just done, and he sets up for the Tiger Driver, and he gets that look in his eyes. And Charlie, he's going to get that look in his eyes one time, and we're going to see a different look. And we're going to know he's about to do it, you know? I think he's hitting that move at some point. That's how Will turns heel. You know what I mean? And God, that heel turn will be legendary when it happens. You know what I mean? And when he goes full with Don Callis, and they're just doing like the Kenny with Don Callis full era type shit. And Konosuke eventually, you know, betrays the law because he wants to be the big match guy, and Will's in his way or something. I don't know anyway. But yeah, no. So he refuses to hit the Tiger Driver. MJF then capitalizes on this, grabs a Diamondite diamond ring, punches Will with it in the face. MJF pins Will Ospreay while after the ref, you know, gets... Oh, sorry, there was a small bump into the ref right before he grabbed the ring, I should say. That created the distraction that allowed him to do that, punches Will with the ring, drops the ring out of the ring. I gotta say, I guess shout out to the camera guys that got the shot of it that looked fucking perfect, you know? That was like the steady shot.
Good camera work again this week. Mm-hmm.
And had really good focus on the diamonds and shit. That fucking ring looked beautiful, by the way. But yeah, so MJF wins the international championship. So yeah, let's talk about that. You were about to go into it, so I hopefully I didn't completely derail your train of thought because I just wanted to get in
that I did not see coming at all. At first when the match started, I forgot it was for the title. And yeah, just to sum it up, I think this match is exactly the type of match that's made for the wrestling fans, or like Tony Khan,
the sickos.
The sickos. So
we had a sicko section in this crowd. This crowd was cooking, dude.
It was. So let's get into Will Ospreay's title then. So Will Ospreay held the international championship for 52 days. He won it at Double or Nothing off of Roderick Strong in a very, very good match. The same week at Collision, he defends the title against Kyle O'Reilly in just a fucking badass main event that was one of our favorites that week.
Okay, Kyle O'Reilly actually, like, on a shit rampage was actually really funny. I'm not even gonna lie.
2 weeks later, he's defending the title against Rey Fénix in another awesome match on Dynamite. The following week, he defends it in the main event against Brian Cage on Collision. Probably the best Brian Cage singles match I can recall. And then 2 weeks after that, he defends it against Daniel Garcia at Dynamite Beach Break, Dynamite 248. Where, again, incredible fucking match. And then 2 weeks later, he drops it to MJF and definitely Dynamite match of the year. You know, when we do our awards at the end of the year, this is going to be a wash. Because it's like, well, what was better than that? Fucking nothing. Good luck.
It's not even going to be close. Will's winning male wrestler of the year. He's been all over every show having the best matches. You know what I mean?
It's every match.
Pay-per-view match of the year, I don't think he's going to win. If we did, like, individual pay-per-views, like, what's the best match of this show, he probably wouldn't win all of them, but he'd win more of them than you think, you know?
It's fucking remarkable. It really is. So, again, a really good international
Doesn't it already feel like his matches, when he's not main eventing, are still the biggest match on the show on a lot of these pay-per-views? Like, it does to me.
Yeah, and now we're going into All In. He's got no title.
That's such a bold decision. Part of me thinks maybe they managed to secure the Ricochet match somehow. Like,
and I would buy that match in a one-on-one singles for no title. And then we do MJF and Daniel Garcia for the title. And we crown Danny at All In. Look, I can work with that. I can buy all of that. There's plenty of moments we could go with here. Let's hit my favorite. It's not as glamorous as yours. But let's jump over to AEW.
You say they didn't wrestle for an hour? Are you kidding me?
They did not.
0 out of 10.
So we're jumping over to Collision.
Enough wrestling.
Where they wrestled for 10 minutes, and it's the opening match. It was Darby Allin.
Think about this. We used to have less than 30 minutes of wrestling in a 3-hour ring, and we had an hour to open up Dynamite this week. Fucking insane.
Yeah. This the Beast Mortals versus Darby Allin. I can tell you what. After watching the G1, this match was on par with anything in it. This is a good opening match. They referenced their PWG match that they had together in 2019, which notoriously, you know, one of those Darby Allin matches that everyone always talks about, like, oh, well, wait till you see him in AEW. He was really starting to catch fire.
I don't even know what indie Darby was probably fucking insane. Fuck.
And now 5 years
later, getting fucking legal fucking lawsuits filed against him. He must have been a fucking animal, you know?
Yeah, and this is just a really good singles match. They had all the flips, all the fucking the super neck bumps that you want out of these two guys. And I love when we, you know, our roster in AEW, it's weeks like this where this Collision, it wasn't anything super sexy. There wasn't like the top dogs of the top dogs. Yet it felt fluid. It felt like we had a full roster, and we randomly get Darby Allin versus the Beast Mortos, and yet the crowd was fucking into it. I'm fucking into it, and I'm excited for the rest of the show. Like, and this is our first show at the Esports Stadium, so they had to set the tone for it, and it looked good. It looked fine. You know, you can tell it's smaller, but as long as we have a crowd that cares, I don't give a shit about the size.
I have a question. Do you think there was anybody that was in Texas this week that went to COD Champs and went to fucking...
Dude, there had to be at least one person.
Right? At least one person, right? That's a fan of both?
Rocking the Optic Texas. Well, that would have been a flex. Any notes you any thoughts you had on this match? Just fun.
You know, I'm glad Beast Mortos is getting opportunities against more legit wrestlers, because I forget who it was they threw him against on Ring of Honor forever ago that just made me go, like, holy shit, this guy's got something. I know he had a match with, what's his
Claudio.
Name? Oh, it was Claudio? Okay.
Yeah,
it was,
he wrestled Claudio on Collision.
First came in and wrestled, I think, like, fucking Vikingo or something like that, right? And that's what made everyone want them to sign him or whatever, I want to say. And so, like, you know.
Yes, it was a Rampage match for the AAA Mega title against Vikingo.
And it was just phenomenal, like, if I remember correctly. Yeah, like, it was really great. And so, this is what they've needed to do. There just isn't enough people in Ring of Honor right now, unfortunately, you know, for them to do that with him. Putting him on Dynamite, I honestly, even if we lose him from Ring of Honor for a little bit so that he can get some matches, I'd be upset about it, but it is what it is. He doesn't really get featured on Ring of Honor that much anyway, unfortunately, so. And I think it's because of why I just said. So, give him more opponents like this. I think Darby shines in David versus Goliath matches, you know what I mean? So, this is a perfect example. Even though Mortos isn't as big as some of the other big guys, like, you put him next to Luchasaurus or Big Bill, he's probably going to look smaller. But he's still bigger than Darby, and he still has that look, and he still looks like he shouldn't be able to move at the speed he moves for the size that he is. So, that will always work for him, you know?
He feels like one of those guys, too, where in the live crowd, maybe someone who's kind of more casual fan, maybe they're just going to the show to go to the show. You see him, you're like, what the fuck is that? That thing's badass. And then moving like how he moves. Yeah, you're
100%. Right. 100%. Like, his gimmick sells itself without you having to say anything for him. He just looks menacing, and he hits really, really fucking hard. I mean, I've never heard Darby after a match be like, damn, that hurt. So if he's doing that on TV, you know that shit hurt. You know what I mean? Darby knows how to take pain well, and that guy's like, fuck, that guy hits pretty hard, you know? Like, so, good stuff. I like seeing Darby being featured. Do we think Darby has any chance of beating Jack at all, like, for the title?
Sure.
That'd be kind of cool. I mean, Jack doesn't need to hold this title for a million years.
Lose this thing right away, though.
No, I don't think so either.
I do think he very well.
I think Jack's cooking so hard right now. He might have this title for a little while. You know what I mean? His promos have been phenomenal. I'm not even going to cap.
Let's get into our news section here of the week, where we don't have a lot, but our poll result from last week, where we asked, "Do you think Mariah May had the best heel turn in AEW history?" It was a result of yes. Cool to see.
As it fucking should be.
I think that sets the tone for everyone. I think people are excited about that. So,
okay, well, I guess here's a really good poll since I'm thinking about it right now. And this is a really easy poll to do. And I imagine it's probably going to be a pretty much straight up yes. But, I mean, was MJF versus Will Ospreay the greatest TV match in AEW's history?
There we go. Let's do that. And as of right now, I'm leaning towards yeah. I mean,
I think so as well.
The only one I'm having to go back and forth with is that tag match. But the fact that that tag match is still sticking with us.
It almost
stands
on its own, you know what I mean?
That's still the best collision year later.
Match. It's still the best collision match, but best match on TV, I don't know. This might beat it a little bit, you know? It might beat it a lot of it. I mean, we'll get that up and posted.
That'll be on our Twitter at Eat Sleep Elite. And if you're on Spotify, it might only be mobile Spotify. Spotify's fucking weird, man. I mean, at the end of the day, it is kind of a weird fucking site. But if you're on Spotify mobile, you can just literally scroll up and it'll give you the option to vote. Yep. Hell, some of you guys might even vote before the show starts because it's kind of right there.
That's true.
So, yeah, that's that. So, if you.
Yeah, I wonder if the poll ever gets people. Guys, if you guys ever get excited based on when you see the poll when you load it up because you can see it on Spotify, let us know in the comments because it'd be kind of cool to see if it gets you guys a little hype. Yeah. We'll definitely try and make some exciting polls. You know, we're not going to rig anything, but, you know, like this week was just super easy. You know what I mean? But
we're so not was, the was last week. That's not us. Jesus.
All right.
we got a shitload of injury updates. God damn it. That's how you know we're in the fucking heat of the wrestling.
God damn it. Always before all in, man. Always before all in. Has confirmed
that Sky Blue suffered a broken ankle while facing Hikaru Shida on Collision this past Saturday. And Kyle Fletcher shared a post on social media that he's like Dr. Kyle. He's taking care of Sky Blue. So shout out.
I trust that guy. Magical
I do
pick.
Too.
What have we here?
Dalton Castle is set to miss the remainder of 2024 after being injured while facing Roderick Strong in a match on Collision. That was taped July 10th.
Dude, I hate to say this. Dude, this might be the last we see of Dalton Castle, bro.
Yeah.
He might walk, dude. I don't know when his contract is up, but he may just ride the rest of it out, not wrestling, or maybe wrestling, but not doing shit, like with no real storylines, because the entire time he's been healthy, they have done nothing with him. And then he gets hurt right before they're about to use him every time. And at some point, he's going to get sick of... And I've already heard him, you know, talk about in the past, like, how he wasn't sure if he should take on the new Ring of Honor or he should try and go somewhere else because he had offers elsewhere at the time, you know? I bet he's looking back on that, maybe wondering if he made the right decision. But, I mean, I could, you know, I don't, and I should be clear about this when I say stuff like this. This is just what I'm thinking. I don't know what Dalton Castle's thinking. Dalton Castle could be the most magnanimous person of all time and just be happy to have a job and not care that he doesn't get used in the way that maybe he would want to be, you know? But at the same time, I could see it. And the couple of times that I've thought this in the past, it ended up unfortunately being true because sometimes you could just see the writing on the wall. But Dalton Castle is extremely talented. I do think if he were to walk from AEW, heal up, and then come back in 2025, that certainly the WWE would probably have interest and he could make a run in NXT. He could be a star in NXT right now. No joke. Like, they could figure his gimmick out there really easily, you know? And I think he'd work in the WWE right now. I think they'd maybe even work a little bit better because I think even though the AEW audience, like, loved Dalton, I think that gimmick, I think more out than ever, could probably work in the WWE because of how PG it is. You know what I mean? And his gimmick could work for that. So, you know.
And it is noted here that he did not suffer a concussion when he was knocked out by the knee, because that was the whole gimmick, was he wasn't able to kick out of his pin attempt, so the match ended really fast. And he did not suffer a concussion. It's a different surgery. Cass will have to undergo surgery. So it's not like it wasn't that caused the injury in the match. So I'm sure some people are like, wait, he got hurt by Roddy? No, well, that was something different.
Now, Roddy is probably one of the safest workers in the world. Let's give it a buck, you know?
Jay White's injury that caused the Bang Bang Gang to vacate the AEW Trios titles is a legitimate foot injury. He is not expected to miss a significant amount of time. And then, after the titles were vacated, the Patriarchy became the new champions, which we will talk about at the end of the show. Killswitch hurt his arm in the match, and he's expected right now to work through it. The injury appears to partially be a torn biceps.
I feel like that's the kind of injury you don't just say, fuck it, I'm going to work on. But I mean, okay, you know, I mean, maybe it can't be damaged anymore. I mean, that is a thing.
Again, I hope he's doing, I hope he's all right.
And he is such a muscular motherfucker that he could probably get away with it. But like, I'm worried for his later career, you know, because that tricep's going to keep tearing on him, you know.
After listening to him on Big Brother, when he would talk about his injury history and what all happened with NXT, because he would say it without saying names, but you know, we knew what it was. It was a hip injury, if I remember correctly, and it pretty much what he thought was going to end his wrestling career. So whenever I hear this little kind of stuff of, oh, yeah,
you worry for him because working he's through it, probably scared like, that he's going to lose his career, right?
It's and like so that's probably now in the back of his mind, and he just got a championship.
And that's when you get hurt, right? Is when you're trying to not get hurt is usually when you get hurt, right? When you're trying to baby an injury. Hopefully, but if he doesn't baby it, then you can also get hurt. It's the double-edged sword. And it's the worst part would be, like, obviously he really doesn't want to fuck everything up for Christian and everyone right now. But, like, I feel like they would understand. You know what I mean? Like, anybody that's going to understand it would have to be Christian. You know what I mean? Like, he's been doing this for so damn long.
I'll save this for Collision. We'll spend some time on the match on Collision. But, yeah, hoping that he's all right and Sky's all right and Dalton's all right and Jay's all right. These are all fucking four awesome wrestlers. And
yeah, that's like four heavy hitters right there. You know what I mean? Dalton's a key part of Ring of Honor.
So many.
Yeah.
Like Jamie Hayter.
Thankfully, we have thick enough roster that we can swap some people out. And, you know, so far as I can tell, unless there was maybe a plan for Sky to face for somebody at the pay-per-view, which I don't think, I can't see it. You know what I mean? I don't see how it would be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think we're dead in the water here. I think obviously there was probably a plan for the Bang Bang Gang. Clearly, you know what I mean? Maybe it was going to be versus Patriarchy on the pay-per-view. I don't know, but
yeah. Yeah. Well, let's get into the review portion of our show.
Sure.
Where you are going to take the lead here with Ring of Honor. And then I go Dynamite Rampage and you send us home with Collision.
Sure.
So that being said, our final Ring of Honor not taped at, what's it called? What the hell is the place called? The Esports Stadium.
Well, from what I remember from this show, this was taped in, what did they say?
Little Rock. And, yeah. Well, actually, this is our last Ring of Honor before the pay-per-view, so we'll do some Death Before Dishonor predictions at the very end of the show.
I completely forgot about that. That's right. That's literally that. in two days.
Yeah.
We'll get our review out sometime this weekend, probably... If we can Saturday, but if it might be like Sunday night, to be honest with you, because I'm probably going to be working Sunday. So we'll see. We'll play it by ear. You will get a fucking Ring of Honor. It might be in the next podcast episode, honestly, more than anything.
It'll get a dedicated section, whether it's a show or within the show.
Yeah. So we'll definitely review it. Just I may not be able to watch. I don't know. We'll see. It's on Friday, right? So I should be able to watch it Saturday.
Yes.
We'll see. I might watch it when I get off work on Friday. Well, fucking, I don't know. I wasn't planning on having anything to watch on Friday. So now that I do, hell yeah, buddy. A little bit of Ring of Honor in your life. Speaking of which, we had a Ring of Con opened up with a little bit of a recap of the Roderick Strong winning the right to face Mark Briscoe at Death Before Dishonor for the World Championship. And thankfully, hopefully, fuck, thank God, we're about to get a champion that fucking actually has the championship on some kind of television. I mean, I guess, no, I can't say that. Mark Briscoe's been on AEW TV lately, but I would have to think, with how much the Kingdom are on Ring of Honor, that Roddy's going to be there, right? Like, this is me hoping he's going to win anyway. He might fucking lose. God, that would be a fucking... that would be the first time I'd be embarrassed to be a Ring of Honor reviewer. I'd be like, are you fucking kidding me? We're keeping it on Mark here? I'm sorry. No offense to Mark Briscoe. His title run has not done anything for Ring of Honor. I'm sorry. It just hasn't. Am I being overly shitty about that? I feel like I'm not, but whatever.
I can't recall a single thing Mark's done on Ring of Honor since champion.
Yeah, he's had some matches. I just, you know, none of them that mattered. All right. Well, we had a Mark Briscoe cut a promo. He was like, yeah, I'm going to beat Urati. Great. All right. Anyway, MIT, this is now the actual segment backstage we wanted to go to. MIT were discussing their title match of the pay-per-view being bullshit, man. Like, what the fuck? Why we have to do this? Come on. Like, what the hell? You know, good stuff there. Exactly what you expect from them, you know? They don't want to defend their titles, so they're being mad about it. There was an implied, like, I think, like, sort of, like, did they imply, like, that there's going to be... No, never mind. This is literally the last week. I was like, it almost felt like there was going to be something more before the pay-per-view, but maybe they just didn't end up doing that. I don't know.
There will technically be a 60-minute show before the pay-per-view, but that is the day before. So
So they might do something on there with the four of them, probably. Like maybe they'll have a brawl or something before the matches, or I don't know. Maybe they'll just have like a little, not contract signing, but like showdown. Like what if they did that? Like a little, like, you know how like UFC, they do like the weigh-ins and then like they'll just do like a stare down. Like what if they just had them all come out and like just the two of them on both sides and they just did that, you know, the, oh, I'm going to fight you arm gestures, you know, that they do. Like what are they in the face off or whatever? I don't know. That could be cool. As like going into the show, you have them facing off. I don't know. Or maybe they'll just do nothing and who cares. Dalton Castle was also backstage. Damn, we opened up with three back-to-back fucking promo segments to open up this show? Holy shit. All right. Fine. I didn't even realize it. All right, sure. Dalton Castle denied the existence of the Outrunners at first, but then he acknowledged them and said, you know what? I don't have the boys anymore. And, you know, you guys seem first of all, like, what do you guys got going on? So they flex and Dalton is like, he's like, holy shit, these guys are fucking yoked. Holy shit, I gotta have them on my team. So they basically duped Dalton into thinking they were actually really good when they're not. So, I mean, honestly, if they want to, I mean, obviously, and this is kind of the unfortunate part of Dalton's injury, is I actually think if they threw those three together that I could actually get behind the Outrunners. I'm not even gonna lie to you. Like, I feel like I could like them at least a little bit if they're with Dalton, because they're not going to be aggressively overused, and yet when they're going to do the thing the boys used to do where every now and then they just have a really good match, you know what I mean? Like, then, I mean, assuming they can do that, you know what I mean? But, like, maybe have a big moment, like a big, because I feel like these guys are probably good enough to at least have a hit a good comeback in a trios match or something, you know, or even just a tag match. And, like, I feel like the aura of Dalton could carry them well enough in the same way that it did the boys, you know, because I don't think the boys were, like, on their own anything special, you know? Like, but with Dalton, I feel like it could work. But either way, they teamed up and took on Lance Archer and the Righteous. The Package, Charlie. It's the last time we're going to hear that for a while, unfortunately. The rest of the year.
The Package.
God, that fucking Ring of Honor for the rest of the year is going to be so dull without Dalton, dude. Oh my God. That's got me so down. Oh well. You know what? We won't talk that much about it. Was this the match right here? Was this the one where he got hurt?
No.
Okay.
So no, this match was taped on July 6th.
Okay, so this is just like random match. Yeah, I mean, it was fine. It got more time than I was expecting, to be honest with you. You know, it's like I always say, like, I mean, I don't know that I would want the Outrunners to beat I don't even know why you threw these two teams against each other, because they're two perspective teams that I think people could get behind. And I mean, I guess they have to win at some point. It just felt really strange having Lance Archer and the Red just win this. I don't know why. So I guess, what do you think? It's like heading towards Righteous versus Kingdom here. Ring of Honor's tag division is just in shambles right now, dude. Like, it is not going well.
Yeah, I don't think they have an idea. Maybe they're building up a team for MXM to face. You know, I have no idea.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, let's talk about them. They had another video package here, and these fucking segments are gold. I don't even want to talk about what they say in them anymore, because like, I'm sure they're posting them somewhere. If they're not, they're fucking idiots. You know what I mean? Like, these should all be posted on YouTube as like little blurbs, like check out these guys on Ring of Honor. I mean, if you want to advertise Ring of Honor, that'd be a great way to do it. You know what I mean? Because I'm going to be honest with you. I think a lot of the people that watch AEW's YouTube channel would probably watch Ring of Honor if they're going that deep. You know what I mean? Anyway, Red Velvet took on Maya World, who, if I remember correctly, was trained by Athena. And from my recollection, was pretty good in the stuff that we saw from her against Athena. And I thought they did some good stuff here. And she hit a new move, which I don't know. This is like the fifth time I feel like Red Velvet's tried to find a slam to use. I just don't feel like any of them work, but maybe that's just me. Maybe she'll hit one and I'll be like, damn, she needs to keep doing that one. But This one, not for me. We got another podcast plug for All Elite Arcade, which was then promptly followed by Evil Uno in a suit calling out a legend. And I was just like, all right, fuck it. I'm down. Uno just came out. First of all, we had somebody cutting an in-ring promo on Ring of Honor, so that's fucking first. But, you know, like, and he's like, I want one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, because that's how you become one, is by beating them. And I was like, fuck it. All right, Uno. Shibata's music hits, and I was like, oh, he's fucked. You know, he's so fucked. It drug a little bit here. I don't know why, again, it's got as much time as it did. But, you know, it ended up ending in a ref stoppage for Shibata to win. Got a little awkward just standing around at the end, but, you know. And, you know, it can't ever possibly be more awkward than Sheeta running around the ring for 10 minutes after that match. That was crazy. Anyway.
Very strike-heavy match from those two, which you would expect.
Absolutely. Evil Uno. I still like Evil Uno. He's just, they just haven't really ever used him for anything in the Dark Order, or basically dead in the water. So there's nothing there. But, you know, Shibata getting on Ring of Honor. You like to see him there. the crowd at Ring of Honor, I think Lake Shibata. We got a plug for All In. We had the Cage of Agony taking on some Jobbers of Destiny. And they sent them on an all-expensive-paid trip directly to the Shadow Realm via some ritual sacrifice.
Again, Cappuccino Jones shows up, and it's a show Taz isn't doing. We need to get that guy on a show where Taz is calling.
100%. That guy, what a name.
That is, he has to be a bit.
It has to be. They're trying to get... They're,
I mean, I'm looking at his thing right now. He does wrestle under that name elsewhere, but, like, what a name.
That guy, I mean, hey, he could have been like, the guy was like Cappuccino fucking, you know, Mark or something before. And then he heard Taz say all the Jones reference, you know, all the Joneses on fucking AEW. And was like, fuck it, I'll become Cappuccino Jones.
Taz goes to a coffee shop and says, yeah, let me get a Cappuccino Jones.
I don't think Taz goes to coffee shops. I think Taz gets his coffee hand delivered by Hook, as he should.
He makes Hook bend the knee.
Oh, 100%. Hook's still, you know,
hold on. If someone doesn't know what we mean, they might think that's fucked up.
No. He definitely makes Hook swear his loyalty.
Yeah, swears his loyalty. There you go.
Yeah.
Damon goes to Heron.
He's still... Yeah, it's true. It's true. No, this is true. I saw this fucking meme that was like, you know those memes of Carl and Rick from The Walking Dead season like 2 or 3 or something like that, where Lori just died and Rick looks like fucking devastated and is looking at Carl? There was one where it had like a fucking face that was like fucking like, you know, like it looked like a snake because it was supposed to be like a dragon neck. And it was like Caraxes to Damon, get me the fuck out of here, man.
Need more.
Fucking the memes have been legendary for House of the Dragon this season. Yeah. Speaking of legendary, Shane Taylor cut a fucking absolutely out of nowhere ridiculous promo about how he's going to, you know, call out the world champion. And God, this promo was just so fucking real because he talked about how he is living in the area right now where there's no fucking power and it's Texas, right? Yeah. And how fucking nobody called him to make sure that his family was even alive. And I was like, fuck, was that a shoot?
I hope so. No, actually, I don't hope so. But
no, I don't either. I think I've heard too much about how Tony Khan is, like, he takes care of people. But the idea.
I want this promo cut on live television.
I know. Imagine if this was cut on AEW TV, bro. You know what I mean? Like,
make people. Like, at the same time, I don't want to be like, oh, let's take everything good in Ring of Honor.
It is great that Ring of Honor is getting this, though. Let's be honest. Like, we would have, a year ago, never expected anything like this on Ring of Honor. So, no, you know.
We're getting Shibata. We're getting Red Velvet. We're getting what we're about to talk about. And it's just like, I love Queen Aminata, so.
Yeah. So, you know, we may not be a complete total loss without Dalton, but it's still going to feel like there's a hole. Queen Aminata took on Mackenzie Morgan. This one did not last long. And we had a plug for Death Before Dishonor. And then in the main event, we had Diamante taking on Layla Hirsch in a lights out, basically what I essentially called an unsanctioned match here because it was...
fuck yeah.
Yeah. There's plunder everywhere instantly. I honestly don't think this of all the street fights we reviewed, even the ones that Diamante's been in, I don't know if this one got there for me. They did some good stuff.
No. This is like a solid... Agreed. It's like a solid 3.5 star match if I was giving it a ranking. Probably a 7 out of 10, right?
Nothing against either person in it. I like them both.
Yeah, it was fun.
Seeing Diamante bleed from the ear after the table spot was pretty metal. Hopefully she's okay. You know, like that.
The
like
Avalanche Code Red, right, by Diamante?
Yeah, that was a good spot. You know what I mean? I'll give them that. They hit some good spots. I just don't know if I needed to see this one. I don't know. Maybe it just hit me at the wrong time at the end of a Ring of Honor. You know what I mean? But like, I don't think I said it was a good main event. Yeah, I don't know if it got there like it could have for me. And I think
I'm very glad they got the main event match. They got a lot of time. And these are two women that they don't really get all the opportunities in the world. No, so
this should work out for one or probably Diamante more than Layla. But I would think Diamante, I've been saying it lately. I feel like they want Diamante to go on a run in Ring of Honor right now and maybe end up, maybe not as champion, but certainly could like challenge at least Billy and maybe win that. You know what I mean? So, and I think that could work because there was a little bit there where her and Mercedes Martinez were doing a little run in Ring of Honor. They were actually pretty good, and then they made it on the AEW TV with it. So I think they could absolutely, you know, assuming Mercedes is able to go. Yeah, you could absolutely play with that, and that takes us to the end of Ring of Honor. That'll take us straight to the rest of Dynamite, which we only have an hour left to talk about because the first fucking hour of the show was the match that I talked about at the top of the show. So
yeah, no kidding. And I forgot to mention at the top of the news, Melissa Santos has joined AEW's broadcast team. She was the Lucha Underground ring announcer. She did the backstage interviews. She's incredible. She's also Brian Cage's wife. So it's cool to see that. She's here.
She doesn't think anybody better than Brian Cage, that's for sure.
Hell no. And she said she put backstage interviews, she put announcer, and I'll tell you what.
What if that implies a shift with Arcady then? Because
I like Arcady Aura as a backstage announcer. I have not been the biggest fan of her in-ring announcer.
So I don't think she was bad on Collision this week, but that's just my opinion.
She wasn't. But there's a difference between not bad and what Melissa Santos brought to Lucha Underground. So I am so down with this. And yeah, again, more talent. Just get it in the building and it freshens up the shows. Let's let them all feel different. Lexi does incredible on Ring of Honor. And when they bring her into Dynamite or Collision or Rampage, she always does good. Speaking of Arcady Aura, she was backstage with the acclaimed Mark Briscoe, and Catherine Bowen said that Briscoe needs partners for Blood and Guts. They fired him up. He agreed. He said he wasn't the only one calling the shots. Swerve and Nana walked in, and there's no better people to go to war with than those you've done battle with. He accepted, and 4 out of 5 for Team AEW set for next week. Did you know here as well? Did you get a vibe that Darby Allin was the 5th at this point? Because I was like, okay, well, it's pretty obvious number 5 is considering what he did last week, beating up Cutler.
To be honest with you, I thought they basically had already announced that Darby was on it. I wasn't sure.
That's fair. TV.
Like, I guess if somebody else had been announced, I wouldn't have been shocked, but I would have been a little surprised, but I wouldn't have been like mind blown or anything. I'd have been like, oh, I thought it was going to be Darby, but now Darby could just face Jack and it could be good. You know what I mean? Like, you know, yep. Not that it was
going to be bad. TV time with the learning tree, where this is pretty basic. Minoru Suzuki came out.
You know, this is starting to get to the point. 90 days. I think we're at our fucking limit with this. Do you think?
Yeah.
Okay.
Suzuki came out, said next week they got a match. Keith grabbed the contract, read that he and Bill are banned from ringside. And then Suzuki headbutted Jericho before waving to the crowd. The Elite are backstage. Said what Team AEW said about them are ridiculous. Matthew said that after next week, they'll have all the gold and all the power. As for after what they do Strickland next week, the AEW title might become vacant. Mercedes Moné walks in and thanks them for banning Britt Baker from the ring tonight. Matthew said no issues from the DMD for the CEO, thanks to the EVPs.
GG, Lamal.
Okada requests Moné do her CEO dance. She does it. Okada starts sweating. We got horny Okada on the timeline.
Yo, Okada, calm down. This in your pants, buddy.
I actually love this shit. Look, the comedy doesn't work every week, but some weeks it really does.
No, Okada.
Horny Okada fucking worked.
Bro, are we getting an Okada fucking Mercedes romance angle, bro?
Hey, yo. Mercedes Moné defeats Nyla Rose to retain the TBS title. She used her speed to avoid Nyla's power. That was kind of the beginning of the match. She hit her knees, all the good, you know, all the classic stuff. She hit the statement maker for the submission. So she ripped a Britt Baker sign from ringside, and someone held it in a sting mask. Who pie-faced Moné. It turned out it was Britt Baker. Security had to keep Baker from going after Moné. All right. I proposed this before Mercedes even signed with the company. She's a heel now. You know where this is going. How long until the Renegade Twins are Mercedes' new security? It has to be going this way, right?
I honestly hope that does happen.
It's
got to
be going this way.
I hope that does happen. I honestly, because she did say on the indies that she liked them, right?
Yes, and it's like, okay, well, clearly they have to be a team to get, like, that is a perfect.
I mean, I think that's the perfect way you get those two to be established, you know. God, I got to give credit to the women's division. Ever since the beginning of this year, toward the end, like middle of last year, whenever it was, it really started kicking into high gear with all the signings and the storylines kind of really being good. The women have been kicking the men's division's ass in terms of establishing new stars by fucking miles, you know? Like,
oh my God. And in Ring of Honor, it's like, look at Queen Aminata, and there's so many.
You know what I mean? Off the top of my head, just in the last, like, couple of years that they've done, like you've had the rise of Sky Blue and Billy Starks, and honestly, Athena had never really been to the height that she's at now until now, you know?
She got buried a long time ago.
Agreed. Jamie Hayter, the fucking, I know I'm going a little bit farther back, but like, you know, I'm just listing all the ones that I can remember off the top of my head. You could keep listing them forever and ever, but the idea that you could just keep listing, Deonna Purrazzo is like the most recent example, you know what I mean? Like, or one of the most recent examples at the very least. Harley Cameron, who came out of fucking nowhere.
Washington.
Anna Jay, all these are established stars now, you know what I mean? And these are all people that maybe like a year or two ago you would have been like, I don't know, are they going to be able to make it as stars in this company? Is the women's division going to be able to carry this? But now it's like, it's kind of night and day. And then the men's division is still doing just fine, but it's like, you know, the most recent star they've made is what, Will Ospreay? Like, because Danny was kind of already there. Yeah. I'm saying like the establishing a star on the show, like from their debut over. Because Will, I think, was over with the crowd.
And just another example is someone who's really had a superstar this year is Willow Nightingale.
Yeah, absolutely.
We did learn Will Washington does her creative too. So
that's pretty cool.
I think
makes a lot of sense too.
All the creative expenditures that Tony Khan has done in the past couple of years, I think he's realized he doesn't have to be the sole person doing all this. When you bring in Jennifer Pepperman, you bring in Will Washington, and you bring in, you know, XXX, it's like you bring in all the, we have a legit creative team now. And, you know,
when did you catch during the picture in picture? I think Mark Briscoe was on the headset for Collision or some shit like that. Like,
I wouldn't doubt it.
And I'm like, all right, I could see that guy producing fucking television. You know what I mean? Like,
so we get footage of Mariah May backstage after winning the tournament, and pretty much it's just her blooding up Storm, getting ready for her big segment. Jack Perry's walking. He said if Darby Allin wanted his attention, all he had to do was ask. He didn't have to attack Cutler. Allin might think Perry cared, but he didn't give a shit about Brandon Cutler. Cutler was
he didn't give a shit about his backstage
area, and Perry told Allin to meet him tonight if he wants to see what a real sacrifice looks like. So then we get Mariah May explaining her actions. She came out dressed as Tony Storm's newest gimmick, and she tried to act as Tony Storm's newest gimmick. I gotta tell you, this fell extremely flat for me. I don't know if it was the portrayal. Maybe she just wasn't vibing with the Tony Storm thing. Maybe it's just me. I wasn't vibing with it because I saw some people did. I saw some people really loved it. There's some people that despised the Will Ospreay match and said this is the best thing on the show. I was not a fan of this segment at all. And I'm chalking it up to her attempting to do the promo within the Tony Storm gimmick, and it just fell flat for me. And fortunately, next week we will see the debut of the Glamour Mariah May, which is her character that she, you know, has been originally sparked to join with. That was the character that is in her name. She's known as the Glamour Mariah May. So I am optimistic about that compared to this. Duke, did this fall as flat for you as it did for me? Were you vibing with it?
I wouldn't know if I was vibing with it. I don't think it bothered me as much as it did you. I kept waiting for the thing that you were, because you like, I'll just keep it a buck with everyone. You texted me like, I don't know, probably like while the segment was on or something, or while you were watching it, being like, yo, I just saw this thing on here that made me like, I wasn't really happy. Like you weren't vibing with it at all. And I was like, I kept waiting for that moment to happen. And I was like, okay, this is just kind of I did think it was a very mid promo overall.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't really get me excited for the match. And I kept feel like she kept stumbling over what she was trying to find in this promo. You know what I mean?
Like, I think it was her trying to do that gimmick.
I'm not even sure.
But she can speak really well. She can cut a very good promo.
You know, we've heard her do it before. I mean, she cut a few to before do
it
she
in Tony Storm's with Tony. Gimmick. It sounded like she was fucking up all over the place.
I don't know. Maybe it was just nerves because it was the first time she had to go out and face the crowd on her own without Tony since she'd been doing the thing, which I don't think is a thing for somebody like her who's been in stardom as a top star for years. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know. Maybe this was just a segment where it just didn't come together for some reason.
Well, hey, for some people it did though. So good on you guys. Well,
I don't think I disliked it as much as you. I just don't think it landed for me like it was supposed to. And I don't know. Yeah. I can't really explain it, unfortunately, you know? But
then we had our main event match where WWE World Champion Swerve Strickland defeated AEW Continental Champion Kazuchika Okada via disqualification. So, yeah, this was the Young Bucks hit the ring, attacked for the DQ, acclaimed even the odds. Jack Perry ran out. Mark Briscoe soon to follow. His faces are taped. He took out the Bucks with a dive. Perry spiked Briscoe with a DDT. Strickland flew in with a house call. Strickland stood tall before Hangman's music hit. Out comes Hangman Page. He's fucking angry. They have a face-off from the apron. Okada pulls Strickland away. Note that in the back of your mind, just in case. Okada, Hangman, maybe there's a little bit of two alphas in the same room kind of vibe. We'll see. We know Perry's a beta. And then the Young Bucks are good Christian boys. Tony Schiavone looks to the sky. He screams, "It's Darby!" The brawl is on. Everyone fought with each other in security as well. Allin goes for the eyes of Jack Perry. He's got stone burners in his hands. He's trying to blind that motherfucker. Chaos ends. Dynamite 250. It closes with Allin being the fifth man.
Oh, by the way, just to jump back to the fucking Mariah May thing, because I know we're in the middle of a completely different segment. When Tony, when the fucking segment came on, Tony was like,
"Oh my god, fuck, bitch!" Yes,
I was like, "Fucking Tony, you asshole! Come on, just, don't call her that."
It's like quiet. Just speak, bitch.
Come on, Tony, chill out.
Good call. I forgot about that. That was brilliant.
See, Shivani in moments is good. That was fucking hilarious. That made me fucking pop. So I was like, "Come on, Tony, chill."
Yeah. So, good stuff. Good ender there. It wasn't the most heat seeking ending ever, but it did have some.
You want me ascending from the ceiling do anything for you? I mean, I thought it was kind of cool. You know,
yeah, like, I dig it. Another wrestler to get that gimmick.
Oh yeah, no, just don't do it to death with him. Like, because I could see them doing that. Because use it now for we have special moments. Yes,
you know, absolutely. And eventually when he wins the AEW World Championship, his first entrance has to be like that.
Now, when he wins the championship, he jumps onto it and then ascends into the sky.
Shit, post-match.
Yeah. Imagine. Yeah.
Let's jump to Rampage. So the conglomeration has a new member. Tomohiro Ishii has officially joined. It is Orange Cassidy, Tomohiro, and Kyle O'Reilly taking on and defeating the Undisputed Kingdom. Roderick Strong, Matt Taven, and Mike Bennett. This might have been the longest 17-minute match ever, but it was all right. Obviously, when Roddy's in there, you know, mixing it up with Kyle, I'm always pretty into it. And Don Callis and Kyle Fletcher made an appearance. Some scuffles ensue, and pretty competitive, good exchanges, good combinations. And look, this is a feud that I think if we're going to establish the conglomeration and if somehow resurrect the Undisputed Kingdom, having a feud against each other is a good way to attempt to do it, right?
So
you need that podcaster to resurrect that group. All right. Referring to him as a podcaster.
No, man. We got a Saraya and...
No. There's something I got to note from that previous match. Fucking Ishii, I think, at one point kicked out of the entire offensive repertoire of the kingdom, bro.
He probably did. That's a big man.
It's a stone pit bull. That's a stone burner pit bull.
Saraya talks about how they're trying to keep her off her show it all in. Harley says that they would be like having Beverly Hills Cops without the Beverly Hills Cops.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck that was about. What the fuck is you talking about? I mean, was there a Beverly Hills Cop movie without Beverly Hills Cop or something? Like, I don't understand the reference, but is it like, I mean,
we'll let it sit.
I think
there.
She meant to say something else, but whatever. It also kind of fits for her fucking insane ass gimmick. So, like, her being an insane ass. So, you know, like, I don't know. But what my takeaway from the segment was, Saraya says she's going to step on people. So I'm sure the D-Gen community is going to be losing their mind for that one.
The Goon Squad. Chris Jericho and Big Bill defeat the Outrunners. Hi, guys. For the world champion.
You know what's going to be really tragic when Redwood wins his second tag team title with Chris Jericho? It's going to be tragic.
Foot on the chest. Arrogant pin is all I got. Minoru Suzuki defeats the Butcher. This is an ass whooping. Mark Briscoe.
Big Bill beat the Outrunners to death. That's actually accurate, though.
He did beat the living shit out of them. That is true. The four members of the conglomeration are standing by for a promo segment. Mark Briscoe does the talking. His word for the day is miscombobulation. O'Reilly asks for the country of origin. Briscoe goes, America. Like, when asked to use it in a sentence.
Can you use it in a sentence? Dude, he sounded so fucking.
In the midst of my miscombobulation, Roderick Strong cracked me in the face with a knee and stood over me holding my ROH world title high in the air. Next week at ROH, Death Before Dishonor, I'll have something for him. Yeah, a big fat L on your chest.
And this is the only one that didn't really get there for me, but man, he's fucking so hilarious. I can't help it, especially with Kyle. I think Kyle could tell he didn't really know where he was going with it, so he just threw in there, you know what I mean? It kind of threw Mark off a little bit, but he fucking went with it. I love that, dude. You know what I mean? Goofy more, man.
Let it, dude. Comedy exists. It should exist in wrestling. Romance should exist in wrestling. All agreed. Of it. Give me it all. I want all of it.
Statlander, give me everything.
Cindy.
I want to see people's eyes being burned out by stone burners. That's what I want to see.
Our only women's match on the show went about a minute. So, GG.
Yeah.
Lucha Bros defeated Private Party in the main event, and you know, we kind of talked before the show, like, here we go again, Private Party.
Yep. All right, are we doing it? Are we pulling the trigger, boys?
See, Wardlow, he wins the titles at least, and then gets fucking sent to hell.
100%.
Private Party? Their push is already dead, and they've got nothing to show for it again.
This Private Party, just like every now and then, like, Isaiah Cassidy or Mark Quinn, like, just every now and then gets caught saying, like, talking shit about Tony Khan or something. Like, I don't understand. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what keeps holding them back? You know, like,
beyond me.
Because it feels like they're the one team that hasn't won the titles yet that absolutely should have like five times over at this. Not like one
and
five
times.
And as
I've
times,
seen
like
before, I've seen many people saying that they hope they're better regarded in the future because they were one of their favorite tag teams since day one of AEW. And it's just like... Up.
I mean, they put them over as beating the Young Bucks immediately.
We've been here for 5 years with them and they've got zilch to show for it. So it's unfortunate. So... Yeah, let's jump into Collision where I've covered the opening match. And what I didn't mention, though, was Sir Elton John has taken his final bow.
Indeed, yeah. We have a new intro, which, in my opinion, I think was kind of mid.
Yeah.
This was like a Raw 2017 era Raw intro.
I can definitely tell it's the AEW guy making it. I don't always like to feel like that.
No, but I mean, you know, it's fine. I mean,
it's
don't
just
really
sometimes
care.
He'll run a loop of making songs sound a little bit too similar.
That's fair. I think they all do that. I think that's why they had to get. I think that's why, unfortunately, even though he's been really good so far, eventually they are going to have to get somebody new to do some stuff because, for one, they have like 10,000 musicians on the roster, so they're going to have plenty of people they can go to. You know what I mean? But even if they didn't, you know, it's not that hard to find someone that wants to do wrestling music. You could literally go to some of the people that have done it before. That's what WWE often does is they'll have somebody on staff for forever and they'll let them go and hire somebody new, probably because I assume you have to pay them more over time. I'm guessing, you know what I mean? Or they just demand more because they've been making your music for you, you know, and they're now more famous, you know? But they'll go back to them later and be like, oh yeah, we want to make a new song for this person that you made a song for previously. Can you do that? And they'll be like, oh yeah, for sure. You know?
Yeah. Funny note, I did see he just made a Donovan Dijak theme. So
look, I'm
keep that in the back of your mind.
Well, listen, I don't think it was bad. I just don't think it was like better than the one we had. And I honestly, there's part of me that's like, would it have mattered that we don't have the Saturday night? This is just us assuming that it's not going to be on Saturdays going forward. But, like, the intro changing really does, I feel like, suggest that. You know what I mean? Like, but, I mean, yeah, I don't...
If it's a cost-cutting measure.
Yeah, I mean, it would explain... that to me, this one's not as tragic as Orange Cassidy losing Jane, you know? Like, that's so brutal to me because he was so good with that song, you know? And his old song's just not as good, you know? Oh, well. But... Either way, yeah, I guess I should actually start talking about the show. Like we mentioned earlier, we had Arca Diora on ring announcing for this show. I think she did a competent job. She has a different sound to her voice, and I think she puts the right emphasis on the right things. I think who she reminds me of. You know what? She reminds me of a female version of that. Is it Greg Roberts? Is that the dude that was doing ring announcing in WWE for a bit?
I think yeah.
The white dude that had like the really booming voice. It's almost like a female version of that. You know what I mean? Like... Anyway, I don't think that was his name. Whatever the fuck. The guy that's like if you played WWE 2K22, the guy that's the announcer in that game, I don't know his name, but he was around for a little bit, like a couple years in WWE, and then they just replaced him with somebody else. I can't remember who. They just dipped out and didn't get signed anywhere else. Because AEW obviously already had, Justin Roberts. Anyway, Darby Allin match we talked about, they claimed... Did we really open up both fucking segments following the first match with an Acclaim segment backstage? What is going on?
Yep.
All right. Whatever. Anyway, the Acclaim were backstage, and I mean, I didn't hate this anyway. I mean, you know, Daddy Ass basically looked at them and said, bro, you're in fucking Blood and Guts. You better fucking lock the fuck in, bro. You are going to get fucking murdered if you don't. And they were like, shit. You know? So, I mean, I guess at least they're mentally in the right place. That's good, I guess, you know. Hikaru Shida took on Sky Blue, and I was saying to you earlier when we talked about Sky's injury, in my notes, I was talking about how this was like a big moment where we're going to find out where Sky's at in her career, depending on whether she wins here or not. I do think she was going to win this match. I genuinely do. That's what I had a feeling going into this match, especially the way they built it up a little bit, like a week before. And unfortunately, Sky Blue did suffer an injury during this match. Match had to be stopped, which is always, you know, I don't want wrestlers to wrestle when they're not able to, when they're hurt. I prefer them to end the match every time, pretty much, because I don't want them to get more hurt, obviously. But it just does suck when a match does have to be stopped because of an injury, you know, because I just know this match would have been phenomenal, you know. And I believe this was probably a fill segment that they threw in to try and fill some time, because obviously Sky Blue versus Hikaru Shida only went like a few minutes. And Lance Archer murdered several people backstage and implied he's going to be getting some singles matches here soon, so that should be fun to watch him beat some people up. I'm not sure. Maybe you think Archer might face Swerve before the pay-per-view or something like that?
Yeah.
He's faced a lot of the champions, so it wouldn't be that crazy.
No, yeah, it wouldn't be.
I mean, I don't know who else you'd throw him against. I don't know. Yeah, I can't think of somebody who I'd want to face Arthur right now that's got a championship. Like, maybe Jack, but just because it'd be fun to see what he could do with it. But, you know, I can't think of anybody who I'd want to see feud with Archer. Maybe they just are just going to give him a couple singles matches because they needed to fill time on this show. Either way, we had a Jericho versus Suzuki being set up recap, and we had some comments from Jericho after the, arrival, and then, you know, I guess a little slap down from Suzuki that he said he wants to get violent and turn this dream match into a nightmare. So shout out Jericho, I guess. I do imagine Jericho will show up for this. It is going to be two old guys though, so there is always that possibility of that being a thing, you know? So hold my breath on that one, you know what I mean? Don't know how that's going to go. Because Suzuki has had all good matches pretty much in AEW, but I don't know if we've seen him wrestle another old guy before, which makes me a little worried because how that can sometimes go in Japan, you know? Even with these guys that are still pretty good.
Yeah.
Cautiously optimistic is the term I use a lot on this show. Tony Nese took on Rey Fénix. Tony Nese is...
This was a hoot.
Oh yeah, it was a great match. Tony Nese versus Rey Fénix. Yeah, so Tony's running the same gimmick. He's still calling people fat and stuff like that, basically. Which, I mean, fair enough. I don't know what else he would do right now. It's not like they decided to completely change everything about the Premier Athletes. They just kind of repackaged it, you know what I mean? Yeah, we had some thunderous strikes here from Rey. And I think that something that I got to give Rey Fénix credit for, every second of every match that he's in, he keeps the crowd cooking for every single solitary second of that match. There's not a single second where the crowd isn't behind him. He almost can carry these matches on his own. And then you put him against somebody like Thone, and he's fucking going to deliver. Because Tony, for those of you that don't remember from the Cruiserweight Classic and from the fucking the early Cruiserweight stuff on WWE, this guy was a fucking animal. He would have these ridiculous matches and still get booed out of the building. He'd be more over, like, you'd think he'd be more over than some of the guys he was facing because of what he could do in the ring. But he would, like, have these ridiculous matches. And then people would just be like, oh yeah, fuck that guy. Because he was so good at getting the crowd against him. That's why I really like Tony Nese. I think he really delivered in this. I mean, this has to be the best AEW match for Tony Nese so far. I mean, it's not even close. Like, Rey got him there. And I think Rey can be used in this. I think we've been trying to figure out what we do with Rey Fénix in singles for a while, right? Because we know he's good. But we know that if we were going to have a single star between the two of them, it's probably Penta. Let's be honest. The run Penta went on a couple of years ago was insane, you know? And his runs in Lucha Underground, probably also really insane, you know? Like, but
I love the
Rey can be used like this.
Back to back was fucking, it's just so much fun.
I just love how Rey can, like, carry this. I feel like he can help to get some people like Tony over, because I do think this will help Tony in the future. I think people might remember this. I hope, you know what I mean? And even if they don't, they'll remember that they've seen him have good matches before. I mean, this is how you get a new group like the Premier Athletes over, is you put them in a match against somebody like Rey Fénix and you just let them fucking go. You know what I mean? Good stuff. FTR, Charlie, they are back. And they're back. Called down to the ring by Tony Schiavone and good old Schiavone. And he then, you know, I mean, I think he hung out in the ring, but he doesn't really talk to them much after they take the mic. Basically, they explain why they saved Tommy Billington. And they're like, yeah, I mean, we would have, you know, gotten involved anyway, but Tony, you know, Tommy Billington's the Dynamite Kid's pretty fucking cool. So, you know, we would have done that for him anyway. You know, basically they're like, yeah, we did it because, you know, we wanted to get involved because we were on the sidelines watching everyone else take on the Elite. They call out the Elite and they say it's buck hunting season. Well, they said it was buck hunting time or something like that, but I think season sounds better personally. So that's what I'm calling it. It's buck hunting season. So that's pretty metal. A couple of buck hunters out here. But, yeah, and they actually cut a pretty good promo overall here. I believe at this point the mic was tossed over to Dax from Cash, and he says they have a journey that's going to start now, and it's going to end at Wembley with them winning the tag team championships for the third time. So, Charlie, I believe we have our tag team title match for Wembley, and my God, it burned the fucking universe down last time. Is it going to do it again this year, Charlie?
We can only hope so, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, really.
This is when you got to pray to the wrestling gods that they just shine on all both teams for right now, because we got there last year. Fucking keep them both off TV for a little while in terms of actually wrestling, maybe. That might be the move, you know? Even though neither team's going to want to do that, but you might need to just to keep them from getting hurt, you know what I mean? Like, we need this.
It felt like the final chapter last year. And what we're learning about this feud, Charlie, is it's never going to end. These two will always be at each other's throats for all time. If any of them are either champion or potentially going to become champion, the other team is going to get involved. And I think we may have that with Swerve and Hangman as well, you know? So, you know, we have these long-term stories that you can keep going back to. And Wembley's just shaping up to be a fucking insane show, isn't it, Charlie? It's going to be nuts.
Yeah, I'm feeling very optimistic about it. I'm very curious.
Think about the matches. We're going to have Britt Baker versus Mercedes Moné. We're going to have, obviously, you know, Swerve Strickland versus Bryan Danielson. We're going to have this tag match that we just talked about. We're going to have, it keeps feeling like they wanted to put Pac on the show, but they just haven't yet. You know what I mean? Like there's like, I'll just get to it. Like there's going to be a ton of really amazing matches on this show. And we're still going to get more announced in the next couple of weeks. So like, you know, it's shaping up to be a really fun show. That's definitely going to probably be the most fun pay-per-view to review this year, I would think. Hopefully anyway, you'd hope it would be because it's supposed to kind of, originally it was, you know, Double or Nothing was our WrestleMania. I do think All In has become that for this company.
Yeah.
I guess we'll move on here. Did you have anything you wanted to talk about with the FTR segment? I thought they got a nice little promo here, you know, gave us a sense of direction of where they were going.
Agreed. And, you know, it is nice to see our boys back and to hear them cutting some heat like this. And it was at this point in the show, like, especially after the Phoenix match. And I was like, we're in for a fucking, I was starting to get really excited for the Lumberjack and the main event match. And I was like, all right, so everything was keeping me excited.
No, I would say even through the Roddy match, I was probably like, okay, this show's kind of cooking here. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But either way. All right. So we cut to backstage. Hikaru Shida's like, bro, what the fuck? I wanted to fight. Who's going to fight me? And I guess there was just nobody within a 10-mile radius because no one came up. So, she called out Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. For a match at Blood and Guts. I wonder if this match would have happened anyway, regardless of what the result was in the Sky Blue match. I'm guessing so, but I mean, maybe probably not.
Yeah.
It's possible. I mean, usually they'll have Sheeta to work a couple of matches when she comes in for a few weeks. So, and she's been around for like, what, 3 or 4 weeks it feels like right now, maybe even longer. So she's been around for a little bit. She's on a little run right now, you know what I mean? So I'm not surprised by that. And yeah, so good stuff there. You know, Sheeta always cuts really clear promos, even though you can tell English is not her first language, or at least wasn't, you know what I mean? At one point, she speaks really good English is what I'm trying to say, which not all of the Japanese wrestlers can do, because not all of them care to, because I don't think you need to be a wrestler all the time, you know? It's nice for the promos, but, you know, you don't need to be able to hear what somebody's saying to get the... I feel like visuals and, like, facial expressions can tell me enough about a wrestler that I don't need to hear what they're saying sometimes, you know what I mean? And that's why I still maintain that Takeshita should not speak in AEW as much as possible, you know?
He doesn't need to, straight up.
He can tell you what he needs to tell you in the ring. I just wish that Tony Khan understood that sometimes, which I think he does. I think he has different ideas, and I don't blame the Conster. He's pretty good at his job, so I won't question it. All right, Charlie, a rematch 3,070 some days in the making. Roderick Strong versus Tomohiro Ishii.
Yeah.
Man. Everyone banned from ringside as well, if that matters, which it doesn't, because it literally didn't matter in the match because they just came out of the crowds, you know, like whatever. The ban from ringside gimmick, if it's just going to be fucking blatantly just disregarded, it's just got to go, doesn't it? Like, let's be honest, like if it's not going to matter, and it does matter sometimes. Like sometimes there is actual repercussions, but it must have just been that someone forgot to write in it, or you'll be fired or something into this match. You know what I mean? Like. Whatever. But yeah, so we had a little bit of the chopping going on. It was hard hitting. Ishii hit this forearm on Roddy at one point that just fucking killed him. Roddy did a lot of selling in this match. We had a long delay vertical suplex on the bottom rope from Ishii. And Taven and Bennett then ended up, I wrote into my notes as they broke the Geneva Convention because they did. They broke the law. And they came out and involved themselves in the match. And I assume we'll get no consequences for it. And, you know, Roddy then taps him on the nuts. And hits the knee, pins him, and as they're about to sacrifice the man, Mark Briscoe and company come out and make the save. I didn't, like, love this, but, like I said, at this point, it wasn't, like, ruining the show for me or anything. So, we got a recap of MJF winning the International Championship, and some small comments from him after, basically saying that Will was easy. We got the clip of him saying easy dub, but that was right after he basically said the same thing in this promo, which is, yeah, I didn't even break a sweat out there. That was easy while he's literally on an oxygen mask, you know, like, so, you know, MJF doing MJF things, good stuff there. we had our debut of Hologram. And Charlie, I actually kind of just want to throw straight to you here because I have thoughts, but I want to hear your thoughts first about what you thought of Hologram's debut versus Gringo. But
I thought this was an awesome debut, and he really got himself over with the crowd.
Yeah,
nearly
that's
fucking
the key
instantly.
Here, I think that's the key, is how the crowd was behind him, even though he was
like,
they had nothing to go on, and nor did we, you know, other than we know who the guy was, right? We know who he was in Mexico, right? Or do we not?
Yeah, Aramis, and he's a very safe worker, and he was just very good.
Okay, sure. Yeah, this is what I wrote in my notes. I'll just read it verbatim because it's like just like a small paragraph. Gringo Loco got a little pop, by the way. Shout out Gringo. So the crowd remembers that guy. I mean, how could you not? The matches that he had, you know, that were in front of a crowd were all pretty solid. So, you know, or sorry, I should say on TV, whatever, you know. Anyway, and the first thing I wrote in my notes after he hit his first like Hurricane Rana or whatever it was that he hit on Gringo, dude, I was like, oh, this guy has it. And I want to see what he can do. And this is just the people off the top of my head that I wrote down, but there's 25 more. I wrote down, I'd like to see him against Will, against Rey Fénix, against potentially Ricochet, AR Fox, basically any flippy motherfuckers on the company, I want to see this guy put up against. Because they could make some fucking magic with them. And the thing that I was so struck by was that he got the crowd behind him without a single thing to go on. I liked his entrance as well. His finisher is called the Portal Bomb. And for those of you that did not see this, this is something we wanted to note here. His debut is in full on YouTube. So if you did not get to watch this and you don't have a way to watch Dynamite, go watch it. Or sorry, Collision.
Entrance
or Dynamite,
and everything. Like, go the whole watch fucking match. Shebang's on there.
1000% go watch it. Even if you saw it on the show, go watch it again. Get that shit pumped up on the fucking YouTube because it'll make them realize this guy has something because people are interested in him. So.
And I might have mixed my words. I meant to say it's very safe to put him, or very smart to put him with Gringo Loco, because Gringo Loco is one of those luchadors that he's so safe and he makes everyone look great. Like, 100%. He's one of those guys that the reason he works at AEW and with Ring of Honor is because he's so good at making everyone else look better around him. And that is that's a skill that is very useful. And it comes in handy when you're putting someone against in their debut match to catch the crowd, you know?
Yeah, 100%. All right, so we got a segment. All right, okay, I got to ask you about this next one because I have no fucking clue what the point of this was, Charlie. We had the Von Erichs and Dustin Rhodes backstage.
Yep.
Basically explaining why the Von Erichs are dope.
Yep.
What else was there here? I'm so confused. Are the Von Erichs in AEW?
it's just pretty much setting up a thing for them at Death Before Dishonor. Long story
short. Okay, fine.
It sounds like they're going to be a trio at Death Before Dishonor. So.
By the way, no, I'll get to it we'll talk about it when we get there. Okay, yeah, so Mark Briscoe cut another promo. This time it was on The Elite and then also on Roderick Strong. And basically his promo here was essentially pro-worker. I'm not even going to cap. He was like fucking talking about how the rich fucking exploit us, basically. You know what I mean? Like, and how that's who the Young Bucks represent. That's just, it's cut kind of deep, honestly. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think the Young Bucks are, you know, the evil kind of rich people, but they're, you know, still.
It's the gimmick.
Hey, you know what I mean? Like, no, that is the gimmick. They are the evil rich people. That is their gimmick right now, right? So I kind of, when you think about that, it kind of just shows where the Young Bucks, how smart the Young Bucks are. They see the fucking writing on the wall, or not the writing on the wall, to kind of imply something. They see the shifting tides in the world of how people view that stuff, you know? And they said, well, if there's going to be one villain that people can get behind right now, it's going to be us as the bad guys that are fucking everybody over because we're rich and we can, you know? It writes itself, essentially, you know what I mean? All right, I have never been a fan of lumberjack matches, Charlie, and I was still not one after this match.
The gimmick of lumberjack's pretty lame.
It doesn't really work. Although I will admit, Rachel in the lumberjack gimmick outfit popped me a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
that's good.
Fair. I was like, all right, shout out, Rachel. That's fucking classic, you know what I mean? But, you know, because someone always does it, right? Every time, you know? But it's always fun to see what people do with that. Notable people. I mean, they had the whole women's division out there pretty much, give or take, you know, minus your main stars, because obviously you don't want to just throw all of them out there, you know. But, you know, we had like Athena and Billy were out there, I think. Taya Valkyrie was out there, which ended up playing into this match. So, yeah. So there was a suplex that took out the crowd at one point. Then there was also like a dive from Thunder Rosa, I think, that took out the crowd at one point. The crowd were basically just there to take a bump at the right times, essentially, of women. That's what they were there for. Not even kidding. They didn't really throw people back in that much, you know what I mean? Like, and like what I remember from WWE lumberjack matches was always just the heels would always just take the opportunity to beat the shit out of people, you know? WWE doesn't really do that, you know what I mean? So whatever, I guess, you know. But I will say about this storyline, though, they've done a good job of not overexposing it, I think. Like, I feel like this match still actually mattered here, you know what I mean? Like, you know, which is a little yeah. unfortunate given the nature of a lumberjack match just not being that exciting. But I do think they got enough out of this that it does feel like some... Like, it's not over, but I think given the way it ended, maybe it is, because that's kind of what Rosa was saying. It was like, I want to just be done with this, you know, fuck this, this is bullshit. I don't like you, go away, you know, like, essentially. And that's why this is... going to be a lumberjack match or whatever, you know? And if this is the end of the storyline, I wish we'd gotten some pay-per-view matches out of this, but I guess we didn't necessarily need to have that. You know, I will often say on this show, there's some things that are just intended for TV. This might be one of them. And so the way she ends up beating her, Taya Valkyrie, I should say Deonna Purrazzo ends up picking up the win over Thunder Rosa here is because Taya Valkyrie hands an exposed turnbuckle to Deonna Purrazzo, and then the ref gets distracted and she hits her with the turnbuckle, 1-2-3 pin. GG's. Deonna wins, probably a pretty big win for her career, let's be honest, you know what I mean, in AEW. And Thunder Rosa and her, I don't know if they're done yet, but Taya Valkyrie and Deonna Purrazzo as a team up, that could be business right there. That could get over, I feel like, because Taya already kind of gets over on her own, you know what I mean? And Deonna is very established at this point. And in the process, in a similar way to how like Harley kind of got established by being in the proximity of Saraya, I think a similar thing can happen with those two, you know what I mean? Not that Taya isn't already considered legit, but you know, she's only had like a couple of TBS title shots, I think. And I don't think has she had a world title shot yet? I can't remember. If she hasn't, this could be the Taya Valkyrie.
World title? I don't think so. She did wrestle Jade.
This could be the avenue to get there. That's why I mentioned she had TBS opportunities. I don't remember if she probably has it. If she did, it was Eliminator, you know what I mean? So
probably, yeah. Yeah.
Probably an Eliminator against Tony. All right, to the main event. And Charlie, something I want to note here at the top here, I believe Shivani said this was not for the Unified titles. This was just for the AEW title of Trios titles. So I don't know if that means those are just yeeted or if he misspoke or, but I don't think this was for both. I think this was just for the AEW Trios championship here.
Very interesting. Let me check the Ring of Honor website to see if it shows that those titles are vacant or gone. That is you're totally right. I didn't even pick up on that. And there are no longer 8 Trios titles listed on the Ring of Honor website. It's safe to assume they are gone.
They deleted them. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. Maybe the decision was just made. You know, we were going to do this thing with the Bang Bang Gang where they were going to hold them both for forever. And then eventually we're just going to throw the Ring of Honor titles away and say that they didn't want them or some shit like that, you know, Jay White would come up with a way for them to end up just being as Trios champions at some point, you know what I mean? But maybe they just decided it was for the best to just, you know, get rid of them. To be honest with you, they never did a damn thing with them. The only team that ever held them was, the Embassy, and the Embassy didn't do a damn thing with them, unfortunately. Had a couple of okay matches with them, but never were there ever really any Trios that stepped up besides Dalton and the boys. And I think probably when the boys got yeeted from the company, I'm going to go ahead and guess that they probably said, these titles are basically dead because there's nobody else, you know? Unfortunate, but it is what it is. So we had the Patriarchy Kick on the Bang Bang Gang for the AW Trios Championship. Man, Juice was fucking loose in this one, buddy. He got that dog in him, you know? And, I don't think the match was, super long, but it was, a sprint and I think a fun one. I mean, the crowd was going nuts. Like, God, I just got to say this about Juice. This is why I missed Juice when he was hurt for so long. Because, Juice is just such the crowd fucking love Juice, and he gets, I don't know what it is about Juice. I don't know if it's his look, if it's his gimmick, if it's the way he cuts promos, or if it's a combination of all those things, probably that. But when he just gets going, dude, and he starts screaming out there in the ring, the crowd just starts to go fucking nuts, and I love it. You know what I mean? He's fun to watch on TV. The gimmick here was, they sprayed some stuff into the eyes of Juice. And the Patriarchy took advantage and became new champions. And Charlie, we had some lights flicker right after they won the championships here. And I got myself a little conspiracy theory here. I think the House of Black just painted a target.
Ooh, okay.
Because they've been saying that their revenge wasn't going to be immediate. And it wasn't going to be when they expected it. I think that was our hint that they are going to be coming sooner rather than later for those titles.
I'm in.
So that should be really cool. And that takes us to the end of Collision. So, I would talk more about that match, but, I mean, it wasn't, like I said, super spectacular or anything. It was fun. I did enjoy it. But, the big thing there is the Patriarchy becoming Trios champions, which I think we were probably going to anyway, even if Jay was available. I think they probably would have won them. It felt like that was the way we were going because, basically every time Christian's gotten involved with something since he won the TNT title, he's won something. You know what I mean? So this makes a lot of sense. And you could have carried that as a story into Wembley of Bang Bang Gang versus Patriarchy, you know, to Ryan win the titles back or something. But you could have also had that be like either pre-show or you could just have it be TV. Like I said, you know, there's always all, like, this is a great thing about AEW is that at any moment, anything could spin off to being something else. We've had feuds that started off on TV that ended up making it to the pay-per-views and then ended up going back on TV for a while and then ended up main eventing a pay-per-view later. You know what I mean? Like with Swerve and Hangman, you know what I mean? Like, so, you know, like that's a perfect example, actually. Swerve and Hangman started as a TV feud, ended up being one of the best feuds of the fucking year. They ran it at a pay-per-view and they ran it back at another pay-per-view later. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And then now it's presumably going to be one of the first matches, if Swerve were to retain against Bryan, that he'll have will probably be Hangman. You'd have to think that has to be the next direction, right? Like, but yeah.
Yeah. And I'm with you. I feel it feels like the right call. It's pretty cool for Nick Wayne to get a title so early in his career, right? This is something you can hopefully look back upon. And, you know, I hope that the Trios title feels as important. I'm really hoping your theory is true now, because I actually didn't even think of that. So, yeah, House of Black versus Patriarchy at Wembley could be a fucking load of fun. So, yeah, let's end this show by doing our Death Before Dishonor predictions.
Yeah,
so absolutely. Odds and evens, you know the vibe. So let's start this off with the non-title match that's announced so far. It's a trios match. Dustin Rhodes and the Von Erichs versus the Dark Order, Evil Uno, John Silver, and Alex Reynolds.
Easy Von Erichs dub.
Yeah, same. It should be fun. Should be some fun. We have a Pure Wrestling Rules match for the ROH Pure Championship. Wheeler Yuta versus Lee Moriarty, and I'm going with the new Pure Champion, Lee Moriarty.
Hard agree. Lee's been getting built up for a while. Unfortunately, we couldn't get him to the world title, but the Pure title is often an avenue for that championship anyway for some of the younger wrestlers. So this is your IC title, if you will, for Ring of Honor almost. You know, it's a good start, and I think he could do some good stuff with that title. Hopefully, he defends it pretty regularly. And maybe we'll see a shift in Lee's style to be a little more technical because of the aspects of the match that you need to incorporate to make it a real pure match, you know? So
a 5-way match for the ROH World Television Championship, Atlantis Jr. versus Leo Rush versus Shane Taylor versus Johnny TV versus Kyle Fletcher. Who you got in this one?
Yeah, I'm thinking, I'm like, this is like got so many bodies in it. It's like, it could be anything, you know? I don't think Atlantis is keeping the title here. I mean, we haven't seen him do much on TV. That's why I'm a little like, I don't know, maybe. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think Kyle's just going to win it back. Yeah, fuck it. Actually, I think Atlantis probably retains because I can't see who's beating him here. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm with you. I got Atlantis retaining. I'm with you.
I think they want to do something with him. I think the timing was just, you know, when it was. You know what I mean?
Yeah. A Texas death match between Diamante and Layla Hirsch. I think Layla gets her lick back. I got Layla winning this one.
Yeah, I think so as well. And I think this is the better match between the two. That's kind of what I felt was happening with that match. It's like they knew they were going to do this match again, so they didn't do everything they possibly could have. But they still gave us some good stuff in that match. So if that, based on that, I think we're going to have a fun match on the pay-per-view. It could be match of the night, honestly. Diamante could be the show stealer, yep. You know?
We got a singles match for the ROH Women's World Television Championship. Billy Starks versus Red Velvet.
Billy retains. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you here. I got
Billy. It should be a good match, though. It should be Red's probably best match we've seen her have in a while, at least, you know?
Should have some fucking hype, too. We got a singles match for the ROH Women's World Championship. Athena versus Queen Aminata.
Fuck.
And
Charlie.
I think it's time. I'm going with her. You?
Yeah, I think it's time. It is time. I think Queen Aminata has proven herself over the last several months. I think she's probably the best prospect that's come into AEW that's like just out of nowhere, just instantly over with the crowd in the women's division since probably Sky Blue or Billy Starks, you know what I mean? So, I think it just makes too much sense. And you don't have to just necessarily drop Athena straight out of the world title scene. She could. If anybody deserves a fucking rematch after holding the title for as long as she did, it's fucking Athena. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
if they want to run that back right away, they even could. But I think they could honestly, if they want to, take this in a completely different direction. You know what I mean? So excited to see what happens here. Would I be completely blown away if she didn't win it here? No, because then you can
assert Athena having a 600 plus day title reign.
Yeah, like if that's what you want to do, fuck it. But if you think, you know, we've gotten there with Athena, you know, we're not like, what more can we do? I just think, you know, it's one of those situations where, like, we often talk about, like, okay, well, what are they going to do if they don't do this, right? I think it's, I think they managed to success, and this is, I think, implies really good booking. They have, I think, booked themselves now to a point where it makes way more sense to put it on Aminata, and then you can do way more with that than if you keep it on Athena at this point. Not to say that Athena couldn't still do a million things. I don't think we've even scratched the surface of what we could have with this. I think, you know, on a, you know, more consistently booked show, she probably could have done even more. But, you know, like, I think at this point, like I said, it makes more sense to put it on Aminata at this point, because I think you can get more out of that. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I'm with you. Main event, Mark Briscoe or Roderick Strong for the ROH World Championship. Who do you have? Nice.
Yeah, no, I think I'm just sick of Mark Briscoe as champion. I'm sorry. I like Mark Briscoe. I think he winning the championship was something that they needed to do. But my concern though, Charlie, is like we put it on Roddy and he gets put in, he's in a similar position. Cause like Claudio struggled to get title defenses sometimes, you know, like I'm just worried that it's going to be the same vortex that the Ring of Honor world title has been. But I do think Roddy should win here because and then the TV featuring of the title. I mean, Roddy's basically on Dynamite or Collision at least once a week. You'll get more eyes on Ring of Honor like that. He's got a like deep history in Ring of Honor. You know, it's tough. You know what I mean? Like, cause I feel bad for Mark Briscoe. Cause like, I feel like the guy does deserve better. Maybe he should have been given like a TNT type championship run or something like that. Or maybe that's what they should do with him in the future. Cause I just don't know what it was about this title reign that just didn't work other than him just not being featured, you know, but he's been featured on AEW. So it's like, it's tough. Like he hasn't really the title defenses just haven't been there, you know?
Yeah. And I think, man, I think I'm with you. I'm going to have Mark Briscoe. I got Mark Briscoe winning. I got him retaining. Yeah. This is going to be a weird one, man. I think this is going to be a fucking weird one. I have no idea. I shouldn't say weird. That's the wrong term. This is going to be an exciting one because I have no idea. So yeah, Death Before Dishonor should be some fun. So that'll be it for us, everyone. Thank you so much for hanging around. Hit us with that 5-star Frog Splash review if you enjoyed the content. And check back next week when we're talking about One Step Closer to All In. We're talking some Death Before Dishonor. Should be a good time. Catch you guys later.
I'm freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
Better be on that clam digging.
What have we here?
Go fuck yourself.